Welcome to Dr. Fredbell's Health, Science, and Energy Show, Saturday night version, September 5, 2009. As promised, we had a great show last night with Steve. He was a little late checking in. Then I didn't check in at all last week, so I guess we're even. So let's just finish up this tiny bit that I promised you from last Saturday night, which was continued from the Saturday night previous to that one.
The sun, for example, died anywhere 2,000 years ago, as a Heracopius. Naturally, there are many masters that are impregnated within the bowels of the human race that survive these cycles because they're transcendental in nature, meaning that they have moved beyond this planetary, stellar, lonely ramification of feelings and spiritual consciousness of awareness. Now, looking into the cycle a little bit more, if you break it down, if you take the 2,587.5 years, divide that by 52, which corresponds to 1 year cycle of the Earth, you come up with 496 years. 496 years, if you study the Shinto in Japan, which claims to have demons and saucers like Scott had elaborated earlier on, as the Indians did, and Japan was the center of civilization up until through the Atlantean times, until about 5,000 years ago when China broke off, and for some reason they became a smaller civilization as a world power. But you can see they're fast coming back again. But anyway, the Shinto master is said to be born every 496 years approximately over in Japan. This is one of those spiritual, high spiritual leaders, much like the Dalai Lama, who takes a centennial reincarnation cycle in Tibet. If you break that down even further by 52, you end up with 9.5 years or one decade. And you can see that one decade, a 10-year cycle, falls in the greater cycle, and you always see changes in a 10-year period. Look at how we were in the 60s. Look how we were in the 50s. Look where we were in the 40s. 40s to the 50s to the 60s. Compare the 60s to the 40s. The 70s, the 80s. Compare the 80s to the 60s. And now the 90s. You begin to see other cycles. The Hopi Indians, for example, saw this Pleiadian cycle, and they have their major ceremonies divided into 52-year periods. Now, the Great Pyramid, of course, is riddled with the Pleiadian mystery, as you would say it. It's seven mystical chambers. Of course, these suggest the seven levels of consciousness, which we're going to experience in a little while, as soon as a few more chakras have been opened by the sounds and energies coming from this tape series. And we also noticed that if you took the rotationary period of the Earth, which was 12,827.5 years, and took two times the base diagonals of the Great Pyramid,
that will be looping back on itself, so you can catch the rest of that from the last 2 weeks. If you want to continue on, so go to last Saturday night or the Saturday night before that, and that continues into that. Okay, now.
You've been busy today on the radio right here, huh?
I've been real busy. How
about yourself? Oh, I've been just hanging out in the heat.
Yeah, I like that, though.
Yeah, I do. I don't really like it this warm, but I've been traveling in it so much the last 3 weeks. I followed it. Everywhere I went, I was bringing heat wave with me, so I'm used to it now.
So you're the one, okay.
Yeah, I'm the one. If you don't like it, call your local congressman, right?
Okay. What are we going to get into today?
Well, I want to continue on with this vitamin thing. It seemed to get a lot of interest yesterday when we were talking about it. And so I want to continue on with the B-complex vitamins, all of the different things that we use in the Excalibur formula. And yesterday we talked about, we only got through three of them yesterday, inositol and choline and para-aminobenzoic acid. And we were just finishing up on para-aminobenzoic acid and what it does in a vitamin formulation. And, of course, one of my favorite things I like to say about that is that skin cancer, you know, of the millions of people that go to the beaches, about 300,000 new cases of skin cancer surface annually. And the majority of these cancers are called basal or squamous cell cancers. And basal cell cancer begins as a small red raised sore. If those of you out there got a sunburn, you start getting a small red raised sore. then it slowly enlarges and displays a gray or a pearly color. It's sort of like a sore that turns into a mole. The center of the lesion becomes depressed or ulcerated, and then sometimes it'll heal. And the basal cell carcinoma sometimes resembles a patch of psoriasis or subhepatic dermatitis. And so anyway, this type of skin cancer is a less deadly type, but still it's kind of not the best thing to have. And the squamous cell carcinoma begins as a raised red sore with a hard surface, which eventually grows inward in a circular fashion and may ulcerate. This is a more deadly cancer because it has a tendency to spread internally into the body. And together, these two skin cancers account for about 90% of all the cases of skin cancer and about 30% of them for the deaths from skin cancer. And there's a third type of skin cancer called malignant melanoma. Is the least common, which around, there's about 9,000 cases, according to my last study, was back in 1976. And the melanoma type is the most deadly, accounting for 70% of all skin cancer deaths. And they usually begin as a birthmark or a mole. And while most of these heavy pigmented dots are taken by, for granted by most people, are not cancerous, one in a million may develop into a malignant melanoma. And that, if you have a doctor and you're worried about one, or you've got one that stays sore all the time, a mole, you should have it looked at, because it's a very simple procedure where they just put a little Novocaine in the area and then remove it. So it's a painless thing. It takes about 5 minutes, and it's a whole lot better to get it done now than wait till it's infesting your body. And PABA, paraaminobenzoic acid, taken daily internally, helps reduce the susceptibility factor of these relatively common skin diseases, and we use a large amount of it in the Excalibur formula just for that reason. I myself am out in the sun all the time, and every once in a while I'll start scratching a mole and they'll get active, but I haven't had any cancerous problems yet, but it's not to say that we can't. But secondly, when we've talked about cancer before, and that is that it's hard to tell what carcinogenic really means. For some people it means something and others it doesn't. That's why there's never been a continuous flow of information stating whether this or that is cancerous or non-cancerous. Nobody really knows whether, for a while saccharin was supposedly carcinogenic. Then it wasn't, and then it went back off the market and back on the market. And it really doesn't matter whether something is carcinogenic or not. When you take it in, preferably you would avoid chemicals in most cases, but if you have a large amount of the B-complex family in your body and your immune system is there, chances are you will not come down with cancer. The cancer usually develops as a B-deficiency vitamin first, and then what happens is there's a runaway factor of a female hormone in male and female called estrogen, which then causes protein deposits to form in parts of the body where they shouldn't, which then causes a blockage of oxygen flow into these areas and a high constituency of carbon dioxide. And when you get a high level of carbon dioxide, then the cancer-type viral cell lives on that. So basically, the cancer is living on cells that are choked up or dead healthy cells. So they become very healthy and dead healthy cells. So the idea is very simple: to eliminate that, is to keep the circulation working properly, and that's what the B-complex family does. The final thing I want to say now about skin cancer before I leave the subject of it is, because the ozone layer is not as strong as it used to be, and because we have larger amounts of ultraviolet coming in, and because this hurts the amount of vitamin D coming into the body, we definitely should take large amounts of B vitamins and avoid certain kinds of sunlight. When I say certain kinds of sunlight, each latitude of the world has a particular angle of attack from the sun. The ray strikes at a certain area. For example, I'm sure, Jim, you've noticed that if you go up in the mountains and lay out by, a pool or something, you get a different kind of sunburn or suntan at a different rate than you do, say, going down to the beach where you're familiar with the way the sun behaves. You ever notice that?
Of course, right.
Yeah. Well, a lot of that is caused by the rarities in the atmosphere. It's caused by the differences in the angle of incidence or attack of the sun rays. And so, I pretty much hardly ever get a sunburn in Southern California, but I can go down to Hawaii, which is further towards the equator, and go out there for an hour and end up with sunburn because of the angle is different. My body's not used to that. Now, once you get into an area, your body will articulate itself and stabilize itself into the climate of the sun in that particular area. That takes a few years to acclimatize, basically, to the sun. And then, of course, realize that when you do, then your B complex factors will change, your D simulation from the sun will change. So it's necessary to take into consideration. And to be safe when you go into a new area, what we always do, you know, like, for example, around the house here, we'll probably take maybe 8 or 10 Excaliburs a day. When we get out in Hawaii or somewhere, even though we're on vacation, we'll go up to 15 or 20 just to make the adjustments. But what that eliminates is the, number one, the effect of where you fall asleep for 3 days because you're breathing fresh air again, you're not used to it, eliminates that effect, which is an adjustment effect. And oftentimes I go with my friends and they'll pick up colds and different things because they don't adjust because they aren't taking proper nutrition. So nutrition is very important when you're traveling, especially more so oftentimes than around the house. Now the next vitamin that we have in our formula is one called B15, pangamic acid. And it was first developed by Dr. Ernest T. Krebs, who I've had the honor of working with through the National Health Federation. And it became very popular in Russia, and still is, as a matter of fact. It's a supplement for athletes training for the Olympics. And it's also a rejuvenating factor for people with heart disease. Now, remember, we've talked a lot about heart disease, and we've made statements many times that a meal today has 50 times less vitamin E in it than it did 50 years ago, the same meal. That also includes other vitamins, which means that the cholesterol levels are going to be higher, the calcium levels are going to be lower, the vitamin D levels are going to be lower, and we need to have that B15 in there. Now, the Russians claim that if you take B15 daily, it's almost impossible to have a heart attack because the heart muscles will contain adequate amounts of oxygen and subsequently low levels of cholesterol. And it also has helped in the prevention of carbon monoxide poisoning, which is what happens when people drive on the freeways. As a matter of fact, a while back I had a vitamin C formula that I came out with and made for a limited period of time, and I had the B15 in that also. It worked very well. And a deficiency of, realize that B15 just is one of the great oxygen carriers within the body. And of course, naturally, it's going to be an excellent cancer preventative vitamin. And a deficiency of pangamic acid will cause diminished oxygen of the cells, hypoxia, heart disease, glandular and nervous disorders. So these are some of the symptoms of it. And we put about 50 milligrams in. If you take the dosage of Excalibur, you'll receive 50 milligrams of vitamin B15 daily. And 50 milligrams is, you know, for the price that Excalibur's marketed for, it's a heck of a buy, because if you were to go to a health food store and get the Angamic 15, for example, you're going to pay $14.95 just for a 50 milligram daily supply for a month of B15. So we're including it in a slightly higher price, but you're getting, you know, 54 other vitamins along with it in synergism.
Dr. Bell, weren't the Soviets using massive doses of B15?
Yes, they were. They were taking up to 500 milligrams a day. And with Excalibur, because of the other coenzymes that are in there that synergistically work with B15, I would say that you probably assimilate the B15 at 50 milligram dosages as well as you probably would taking 150 without the synergistic action of getting it into the system. B17, B12, these are all the nitrilocyte family, and because they're all in one family and one synergistic effect in the vitamin, it's very effective. If you are a hard running athlete in the LA smog, like some of these people that insist on running around UCLA at traffic time, which I see when I'm up there, and part of the UCLA track is along a busy street that brings traffic from Santa Monica up to Bel Air and Beverly Hills, I see these people really sweating in the smog, you know. I would definitely probably go down and get some Angamic 15 and supplement the Excalibur with it because of the extreme stress that you're placing yourself under, along with additional amounts of vitamin C, probably about 2 or 3 grams a day. Now, the next one is that we have in there is one that you should get daily. We used to get it daily, but what happened was with this particular vitamin is that as soon as we started taking the husks off of rice, processing the flour and making it, bleaching it, making all of the food processes. It's one of the first vitamins to escape, and it's known as one of the strongest anti-cancer vitamins, and that, of course, is the B17, controversial vitamin. We use B17. The way we get it in there is we use almond bran, bitter almond bran, as a source. Bitter almond bran is an excellent source of B15. It's a whole lot better to take it through a vitamin supplement. It's not one that's outlawed for public consumption like apricot kernels by the FDA, so it's one that's kind of in the gray area that nobody's really hassling us about at this point in time. And it's often used in vitamins by conscientious types of formulators that know how to prevent cancer. And I'm not saying that I occasionally don't supplement the almond bran that's in the Excalibur on my own with apricot kernels, which I do buy and keep in storage. But I primarily only do the apricot kernels when I haven't been behaving properly and I've eaten a bunch of bad foods from being on the road. Around here, I can eat mostly raw foods and don't have to worry about it. But anyhow, Laetrile is a derivative of the nitrilicide, and it's a very powerful cell oxidizer, and it falls in the complex B12 through B17 family. It was first synthesized from a compound in the apricot kernel, once again, by 1952 by Ernest Krebs, Jr. That was his son. The new compound was patented and called Laetrile. Now, amygdalin, or B17, consists of two molecules of sugar, one molecule of benzaldehyde, and one molecule of cyanide, whereas Laetrile consists of a benzene ring and cyanide. But unlike amygdalin, it contains glucuric acid in the place of glucose sugar. Amygdalin B17 is a nutrient used in body maintenance functions, as are other vitamins. But Laetrile is used in the treatment of oxygen starvation diseases such as cancer. So when we use the amygdalin form, which is the natural form, what happens is if you were to have cancer, okay, and you would have this in your body, it would release a small amount of cyanide on the tumor site. Now, if you don't have cancer, when the amygdalin goes into the body, there is a large amount of rhodonase in the body, which cancer cells don't have, and rhodonase immediately counteracts the cyanide and becomes neutral. And this, of course, is healthy because when the cyanide comes in a small amount and it's tied up in another molecule, in a compound molecule, so it's not even going to be released. It's almost like saying that salt is bad because it has sodium and chlorine in it. But sodium chloride, by per se, especially sea salt, is not bad at all in small amounts. But the elements of sodium and chlorine by themselves are deadly. Well, that's the same thing cyanide is in the B17 apricot kernel. It's just part of a molecular structure that is totally harmless. And as a matter of fact, when you take it in your body, it will help the body produce more rhodonase, because rhodonase is what breaks it down. But if it's, like I say, if it's not present, then the only thing that could be is a cancer situation, and then the cyanide will release on the tumor site and destroy the cancer. That's how it works. Now, a lot of researchers had problems working just with Laetrile by itself, because they didn't understand when you separate the Laetrile from the amygdalin, what happens is you have to put in coenzymes for the body to assimilate it. Otherwise, the body will just reject the whole thing, totally. And even regardless of whether you've got cancer. So Harold Manner, for example, over in Loyola University, found that if he used a vitamin A in the form of A-mulsin, which is a vitamin A like we use in the Excalibur, it's one that does not go through the liver, it's water-soluble, then you will have a proper amount of enzymes to help balance the other end of this reaction. So anyway, it's quite interesting just studying the B17. Now, the name, by the way, the compound, for example, which contains the cyanide, is usually labeled with a suffix, nitrile, spelled N-I-T-R-I-L-E. And since Krebs' new compound contains cyanide, and since it was lava rotary, there's two things. There's dextrorotary and lava rotary. And what happened was, when you talk about dextrorotary, you're talking about spinning light one direction in the body. And if it's lava rotary, it goes to the left, which is a good way. If it's dextrorotary and spins to the right, a chemical or a vitamin or an enzyme would not be that in the body. because things that go to the right or do light spin to the right are usually poisonous to the body, okay? And the lava rotary plus the nitrile is where the first three letters of Laetrile came from, and the last five letters came from nitrile, and the word Laetrile came from that. So we often talk about the body, and this is a good example, we often talk about the body as being a unit of light energy, you know? And remember at the seminar that we did last time, I drew out on the blackboard the actual formation of a hormone from a mineral in the ground, and along that explanation I was able to show on the board how that the body turns the mineral into a unit of energy called light, which the next seminar will go into. It's kind of hard to do it without some visual aid. The amygdalin, B17, is not something just because the Krebs father and son team began to work with it in this country. It was first used by a Chinese herbalist, Pan Zhou, in the year 2800 B.C., and it has been used intermittently by various groups ever since that time. So some people think that because B-17, you know, is just now coming into the vitamin scene in America that it's new. It's not. You know, no vitamin is new. They've always been around. We're just discovering them. But it's been around for, you know, like 3,000-4,000 years. Now, cyanide, you know, is locked in a sugar is locked into the sugar molecule. It is also found in over 2,000. It is normally found in over 2,000 known unrefined food and grasses. A concentration of about 2 to 3% Laetrile is found in whole kernels of most fruits, including apricots, apples, cherries, peaches, plums, nectarines, and some in different brands where we use it from, and some 70 plants commonly fed to animals as fodder. A sprouting seed like wheatgrass, for example, produces 10 to 30 times as much Laetrile as does a mature plant. Few citrus fruits contain Laetrile. Okay, shelled and unshelled apricot kernels usually have 2 to 3% amygdalin and are also excellent sources of protein and fatty acids and minerals. Now, Laetrile, the B17 derivative, has been legalized in several states. As a matter of fact, I went through the legalization process with the National Health Federation when this happened in Chicago. And Laetrile is manufactured and used over 17 countries throughout the world, including Mexico, Germany, Italy, Belgium, and the Philippines. And it is, and once again, I have to say, it's a very highly selective substance. You know, and now DNA. The next thing I want to talk about is DNA and its relationship. Now I'll be talking about it further when we get into the latter part of DNA and the effect of the receptor, which is a life extension device that we've developed, but. In DNA, light spin is important, and when the wrong elements, such as microwaves, radar, ultraviolet from the sun, etc., these kinds of things, are obtained in the body, a mispolarization or disease begins at the DNA level. And there are 6 billion bases joined together to form the DNA. Now, realize that the polarities of the sugars and phosphates, you've got 4 basic amino acids in DNA, adenine, thymine, cytosine, and guanine, okay? And these sugars and phosphates must be in unison, or inversion will cause a new base amino acid and will actually establish polarity-wise upside down, okay? Phosphate with phosphate, sugar with sugar, versus sugar-phosphate combinations that build these little ladders of energy inside the body. And the elements attract each other because of the opposite directional spinning of the electrons in what's called the H bonds, and is not because of the different chemical composition. Okay, so these H bonds are all determined electrically and not chemically. And so, when Dr. Cohn at NASA began to do some research on cancer, and he found, because he is advocating negative ionization as a preventive and a treatment for that, because he found that a cell normally has a strong negative charge on it, but if it's getting too much smog or too much of these different radar waves and all these other kinds of things. As a matter of fact, speaking of that, there was just an article on the news the other night that said the average person in Los Angeles in this area, I think, is getting 1 milliwatt per cubic centimeter of radar just from the radar sets around here, which is exactly the maximum allowable amount by the FDA or the FTC outside of a microwave oven. So we're right on the threshold.
What radar sets?
What radar sets? All right. Have you ever looked up on right above you there at Palos Verdes there?
Uh-huh.
About San Pedro?
Yeah.
Those are early warning radars. I used to work on those. That's part of the radar, the early warning NORAD setup. There's one down here at the airport. The ILS equipment and all of, at LAX, anybody living around LAX,
mm-hmm.
lots of radar up there. That's with how they vector those guys in the fog. That's some pretty, and all those jets, when those jets come in, they have radars on the 747 to determine the landing rate, the distance to the earth. They use radar to determine the distance between each other. The, you know, there's other radar installations back over here in these mountains over towards Edwards that comes over in this area.
So we're picking up a pretty healthy dose of radiation.
Uh-huh. And then all of the ships out sea, a lot of these foreign freighters that come by over on the other side of Catalina and outside the continental United States, over 2 miles out,
mm-hmm.
carry radars that are higher than the power levels that we normally use in this country. Believe me, we get a lot of radar. They use it for distance measuring, DME equipment. Okay, we get it all the time in Southern California. The maximum legal amount that you can have around the microwave on the outside for that unit to be sold is what everybody in L.A. gets continually anywhere in Los Angeles. It was on the news the other night.
I missed that, but that is interesting.
Yeah, so that is another reason why you want to take the B-17 or the Excalibur, and it's another reason why I won't take my receptor off when I'm around town. I mean, I will not. Because you can feel the difference in Los Angeles so easily now with one of those things on versus one of those things off. Because, once again, you get this, the DNA when it's complete, okay, but it's in the wrong sequence. It puts out the wrong sequence of genetic information. And what happens is, when you put the receptor on, for example, you reestablish the homogeny of the magnetic orientation of the DNA. And this is done by the inductive energy. But if it's not done properly, the wrong bases start to get rejected. And this is exactly what happens when you begin to get cancer. And there are lots and lots and lots of subclinical cases of cancer running around. And what I would clearly define a subclinical case of cancer is a person with a negative attitude, a feeling of depression or paranoia or insomnia that hasn't manifested any physical symptoms yet. But at any point in time, if their molecular and their vibratory frequencies break down, their resistance internally breaks down on a chemical level, then they're going to come out with these different kinds of cancers. And if you don't think there aren't a lot of people running around, that every time they have an ailment, they run down to the doctor looking for cancer, the doctor says you don't have it, but they keep running back and they're afraid, they don't know whether they're going to get it or not. These are the kinds of people that definitely need to get into the B-17 and the B-15 treatments, and it will really turn their lives around and make them feel normal and whole again. Anyway, the B-17 shows great properties of rotating the planes of polarized light to the left and the crystalline sugar to the right, which it's supposed to. And under the influence of ultraviolet light coming from the sun, the plane of polarization is shifted to the left and the proper orbital electron spinning in the phosphate base is restored. Thus, you know, if we have a constant source of B-17 in the diet, you can be sure that the polarity of DNA will be consistent, and then the body immune systems will be up, especially cancer will be something that, you know, nothing to even worry about at all. So, a prolonged deficiency in B-17, of course, may lead to diminished resistance to malignancy, and amygdalin can reduce the size of cancer tumors, erase the accompanying pain, inhibit the growth of cancer cells. In addition, it favorably will regulate the blood pressure and may have an anti-arrhythmic anesthesia-sizing effect. So it helps with people with heart arrhythmias, too, like B-15 will do, okay? So I think that kind of sums up the B-complex family in the Excalibur formula, and I won't have time today. Tomorrow we'll get into the vitamin C, and that's a whole great big long thing, you know. And plus we'll get more into DNA tomorrow, and we'll talk about the receptor and how the gemstones in the receptors work, and then from that we'll go into the minerals.
Well, that was kind of fun. So we will continue on. We've got a little time left here. And we will now jump into, excuse me, a little bit more of info stuff, ill info stuff. Okay, a little etheric body coming up. A little etheric body.
Things, but now it's time to start adding the next element of what I call the study of extraterrestrial sciences. with the goal of moving towards a higher consciousness and altering our hormone and body structures to be able to receive and interpret and work with this form of consciousness. Now, the problem with terrestrial science as we know it, and I'm sure you remember, is that it's always somebody talking to you, you listening, and by logic and memory you define what you heard, and as a result of, by definition, you end up supposedly assimilating some truth. And this is, absorption by truth, by logic, does nothing for the spiritual development of man. And also, I think it's a real problem in the fact that it doesn't do anything towards the raising of consciousness, raising of man's consciousness. For example, you know, you can be as scientific as you want, but we still go to war with high degree of science. Why don't we take our intellect, our high degree of intellect that we've developed at this point in time in this civilization, and apply it towards peaceful scientific developments? Why do we always have to parallel it with wartime development? And of course you can say, well, because the other person is going to, well, forget the other person. You know, somebody has to have enough confidence within and set an example for the entire world with no malice or afterthought about doing this. And of course, really nobody on a mass scale is really doing this. No human, no nation is leading the technology into these tremendous things that are quite possible to us now, that are, you know, healing, better healing techniques, interplanetary propulsion techniques, time travel, all these kinds of things are totally available right now. So what we want to do is realize that we have to develop something else. We have to develop the emotional part of the body and bring the emotions coincident with the physical part of the body. In other words, the emotions and the consciousness has to be together, and the mind, the intellect. So we've got to key in our emotions and our intellect. And what I learned is that, you know, when I was becoming a contactee in the early days, I used to always try to outthink what Sumyasi was trying to teach me, or one of these other people was trying to teach me. I'd always think about it and think what's going to be next and think what this was really meaning. And that was a block. You have to go with the emotional feeling. And so what we're going to do now is to bring in, we've talked about the seven levels of consciousness and what they are and where they're located, as far as we could understand it. But now it's time to actually experience them, because if you experience the levels of consciousness along with the understanding and intellect working with the science, or you add the experience of knowing and relating to some sort of feeling to the actual construction of some idea on the physical plane, the result and product is going to be have a hell of a lot more integrity than it would have if you just came at it with just pure thought. So what I want you to do now is to relax, stretch, stand up, stretch your arms, do whatever you have to do to get totally relaxed. Take a few deep breaths. Breathe in, out. In and hold it. Out. And do this a few times, so that you get your body relaxed. Realize that when you hold your breath a little bit, after you take a long, slow, deep breath and hold it, puts oxygen into your system and gives you a tremendous rush, good feeling. Now what I want you to do is close your eyes, kick back and relax a little bit. And I want you to imagine that there's nothing but blackness. Everywhere you can think of or see or feel is blackness, non-existence. There's absolutely nothing in existence at this point in time. You don't exist. The world doesn't exist. There's no such thing as light. Your mother doesn't exist. Your loved ones don't exist. Your kids don't exist. Nothing exists at all anywhere. There's absolutely nothing anywhere existing. And your thoughts, even I want you to even try to steal your mind of all thoughts, not even think about thinking about what you're thinking about. Try to steal yourself on every level. I know it's hard, but I want to give you a minute or two now to just think and clear your mind out of nothing. And we're going to be using sound. We've already talked about sound. We're going to be using the appropriate sound and note pattern with this meditation. So when we're on a particular level, we're going to be experiencing the sound for that level. And this could be done in the morning, or this could be done late at night, or it could be done in the middle of the afternoon. It doesn't matter when you do it. Now still your mind. Get a very, very quiet mind now at this point. I should think of absolutely nothing. Now, with your eyes still closed, I want you to imagine a one light in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of this darkness, this one light coming from nowhere. It just suddenly, out of nowhere, exists one light. And the energy extends as far as you can imagine. And imagine this one light then to be the energies of the Father. This is the first energy field of existence. Time still doesn't exist yet. Only the Father exists. This is the Father energy, the one light. And the one light transmits itself down into the body now. The one light you wouldn't be able to relate to with this one light if you didn't feel it in your body somewhere. And I want you to feel it in the top of your head, just inside your head, just underneath your hairline. Feel it right in that area. It's the pineal gland where the one light, the oneness is. The pineal gland has in it the hormone serotonin. Serotonin is a very powerful hormone, and if it's not balanced properly, it causes the energy to get completely out of control and become very negative. So you want to always have that balance. And the reason that gland is so sensitive is because this one light is the first source of energy, the first ray, and it's a white light. When it reaches the body in the pineal gland, the energy transmits into the color red, because it has to break down. Now the body has to be like a rectifier, it has to break it down. So it breaks it down into the color red. Red then stimulates, it slows down the flow of serotonin in the body, which stimulates the pure energy of red itself, which gives you willpower. So the first energy that's coming from the white light, which is the Father, which is created out of emptiness and non-existence, the first aspect, the first motion of the universe, when the universe comes into beingness and consciousness comes into beingness, is the white light. This directly relates to the pineal gland, which then slows down the flow of serotonin, and you end up getting willpower, the desire to do something, the desire to accomplish, the desire to go out and motivate, to make a move in some direction. This is the will. And in the book Death of Ignorance, you can look at it later, you'll see Ray 1, where it says will. And you'll see different attributes that go with it, and different energy fields that go with it. And you'll see all the different, all kinds of countries, and you'll see that there's pineal gland and all these kinds of things. Now that you realize the Father energy, and it's at the top of the head, I want you to suddenly realize that somebody's talking to you in the tape here. You're being guided through meditation. Your own thoughts count. Everything is happening. When you start to realize that, what happens is you say, hey, wait a minute now. There's somebody else here. There's more in existence now than just the Creator. I'm here. But I'm different from the Creator because I'm realizing the Creator. Oh, I hear somebody's voice. Okay, this is the energy of the sun, S-O-M, sun energy. And this is love, wisdom, ray two. This energy doesn't come to the head, it goes directly into the heart and the thymus gland. And when the heart secretes, or when the thymus gland secretes hormones, which regulates the heart, and the heart starts being regulated by other centers in the body, the pituitary and all these different places where the heart energy regulation centers are, what happens is, you end up getting a feeling from it. And that feeling is love, wisdom, the desire to help or heal someone that's sick, or the love that you have for your mate or your parents or your children or anything. This is love. Its color is a beautiful blue. Its energy is all permeating. Now you realize that we've gone into, we see the one light, and we see, we realize our individual identities, and identify our individuality with the white light receptiveness of it. And now we've talked about the sun, which is the blue energy, and realizing it's coming from the heart chakra. And the heart, the actions of the heart. The next energy we're going to realize is the combination of the essence of the white light. In other words, what kind of substance is the white light made up of? What kind of substance is the thought made up of? What's this relationship between the individual units that we are and God? And what is the common thing that makes us all one and the same? Well, the answer to all these questions is very simple. It's the Holy Ghost. The energy of the Holy Ghost is the combination of the one and the second, and becomes the third. So the white light, the individual white light coming out of nowhere was the Father, the separateness of our thoughts and our ability to identify and have this conversation with Him is the Son, and the whole combination of everything, the intellect, the energy, the colors, the light, the darkness, everything is made up of the Holy Ghost. So therefore you could say the one and the three are the same. And the Holy Ghost is one of the three prime energy movers of the universe. Now the Holy Ghost centers its energy, and it's a female energy, by the way. The Father is more of a meager energy, the Son is a male energy, and the Holy Ghost is a female energy. And this energy secures itself at the throat chakra, in the throat, the thyroid gland, the hormone thyroxine. All these different things relate to that. The energy that it is called, in the color of green, is called active intelligence. And this is thought itself could be active intelligence or the ability to think. In the nuclear receptor, for example, we'll use a green stone to amplify the action of the thyroid gland. But a lot of people don't realize when they have weight problems, they also have a thinking problem. And the real problem is the thinking problem, not the weight problem. Because they didn't approach it right. They approached it from the lowest plane, the physical plane, and they forgot that the physical plane is only the lowest totem on the totem pole. The body gets directions. Told what to do. It just doesn't suddenly get fat or thin without something happening to it. And what directs it is the third grade, third energy, active intelligence. The kingdom of nature is keyed up on this energy field. And we talked about the hydrogen atom. It rotates its polarity through the action of rotation of the earth around the sun and the earth's rotation itself. And this, of course, changes polarity. But green always remains constant. So now we've established three energy centers in the body, three main centers. Now what I want you to do is imagine from this white light, which has in it a blue and a green aspect of it, from that we realize the yellow energy field coming from that. And you notice we're describing a rainbow at the same time. The yellow energy secures itself down into the stomach area. That's the next. That's the first of the four lower sublevels of light. The first three primary rays of light. Now we're at the four sublevels. We'll end up with seven altogether. Now looking back at what these levels are, we talked about the first is the white light. We're feeling that white light. We let it permeate our bodies. That's the logoic plane. When we go back to our text and our Death of Ignorance book and our studies, remember that the logoic plane, when you read that or hear it or see it, that was the white light. That real essence of the logoic plane means the one source, the Father, the neuter energy. Then, of course, the second aspect was the monadic plane, where the energies of the sun come from, the sun being the Christ sun, the higher, the splitness, the freedom to be an individual energy. And then number three, which was the active intelligence, was the ethnic plane. And now number four, we're coming down again, is the intuitive plane, the intuitional plane. The ray type is going, because it's a stomach energy, is the harmony through conflict energy. Now, we also said that different masters that were related to these different rays. Individuals that were highly developed, that had reached a level of consciousness, and their consciousness was centered more on the rays and the energies as they are. And not only are our masters, the entire intergalactic civilizations are also centered on the rays, which you'll probably find out later on in the teachings. But if you remember going back to the first ray, the will ray, the white light, the master that's centered on that is known as the Manau, the lawgiver, the power that brings the law to the society to help society regulate and live with itself. In the White Brotherhood, we had a master called Master Moria, who was known as a very powerful master that, even though he didn't show his compassion like some of the other masters did, he showed his compassion by direct power and confrontation with basically no room for forgiveness, as you would have seen it, unless you really understood what his message was, very intense. Masters on the second ray, which would be the ray that we're talking about where we're individuals, we realize each other as individuals. People like that would be, Jesus Christ would be an example of that. Master K.H. would be somebody like that. Kahut Humi, his name is, or Master D.K., Duo Ko, which is the higher nature of Count Saint Germain and some of his other masters. He was a master of science. He was, in his primary aspect, a second ray master, getting down into third ray, the intelligence, you know, the love, active intelligence ray. This would be the Master Hilrian and Master Serapis. There's a Venusian master by the name of Pandrapa. Also the energies of Aphrodite fall into that. And this in the White Brotherhood is called the Mahakahan, or Lord of Civilization. It's interesting, in South America, the rituals of the cocoa plant, we're not talking about the drug cocaine, but we're talking about the cocoa plant as a spiritual ritual for the Indians down there in South America and Peru. For literally centuries and millenniums have observed this plant as a divine plant, and they call it the female plant, the Mahakahan, and they call it Mama Coca, which Mama Coca is very much related to the word Mahakahan, which is the White Brotherhood aspect of it. And now back into the yellow, where we are now, the master of the yellow ray was Guantanamo Buddha, Sid Arthur. And if you look at how he lived his life by, approaching conflict and resolving it into harmony. Christ did it too, but Buddha processed it. Christ came into situations more with love and forgiveness, whereas Buddha came in with confrontation. And as a matter of fact, the unfortunate thing about Sid Arthur was that he left the physical plane by eating some meat when he normally didn't eat it. He went to a person's house one day and he didn't want to insult this person that he was at his house, so he ate some meat when it was served. And of course, he couldn't digest it because he'd gotten himself too refined. He wasn't able to process that anymore. That meant it was probably time for him to leave anyway. So we call that fourth ray, which activates itself through the stomach, through the adrenal glands, through the liver, kidney, spleen, the corticosteroids, of course, when they secrete norepinephrine, epinephrine, go into the bloodstream, it gives you a feeling of energy. And that's the feeling. The spiritual feeling, of course, would be compassion, whereas the spiritual feeling up in the, from the energies of the sun, which was the heart chakra we talked about earlier, which is, by the way, in the receptor is represented by color blue. That was the love energy. But now we're down into the yellow energy. The appropriate stone that we use to process that when you're weak in this area would be the citron, which is a yellow stone. Now we move down into the fifth area, the fifth ray, the fifth energy field, coming from the one, became the three, became the seven. This is the ray of concrete science and knowledge. It's orange in color. Being orange in color, it's very powerful. But it's also, like the fourth ray, a mixture. It's not one of the primary colors. It's a mixture of colors. And somebody might say, well, wait, what about the white light? The white light wasn't a mixture, but the white light is a mixture. If you take a prism to the sun, which is white light, you get seven colors out. Same thing here. So the ray of concrete science and knowledge is orange. And it, of course, goes to the mental plane, the plane of mental energies. Now, the mental plane is split. The lower the arupa and the upper, which is the rupa plane, as the Tibetans teach it. And in the way of thought, the way the mental plane is processed in daily life, but you can approach logic two ways. You can approach it on a logistic standpoint and act out that way, or you can approach it spontaneously and just let it happen. I remember when I, back before I was thinking in the New Age terms or the new, more expanded concept, the open concept, I used to run businesses and start businesses and think about them as having put together a perspective, project sales, and then go out and try to find money to meet the sales projection. And then once, of course, the sales started, try to beat the sales, bring them up higher and require less of somebody else's investment money, reverse it that way. That would never work in a New Age business, that philosophy. That's why the banking systems are having this problem now, and a lot of other businesses, because now it's spontaneous. The way you run a business today is just let it happen, let it have its own mind. Don't try to second guess it or outthink it, just let it happen. This is what I'm talking about by splitting the mental plane in half. Palladians, being a very mental race and very scientific race, oftentimes their ray types are, as a race, as an entire race, would be more in the orange area. Whereas you could say, for example, the people living in Shambhala, White Island, in the second either, the inhabitants of White Island would be more in the blue energies because they're more in the love, wisdom, and the service of the race. The next ray, which is the fifth ray, is a blue color, royal blue. It's called the ray of devotion and idealism. And it's a mixture, of course, of many different colors in the body, more towards the base of the spine. And it's about ideals and goals and setting these things. The plane of consciousness that relates to that is the astral plane, which is, of course, where you go when you sleep or dream at night, and which, if you're doing this meditation properly, you'll be in that space somewhat even now. It's the place that the entire world is going to go for pretty soon. They're going to end up, when we talk about going into the fourth dimension, the sixth ray becomes the doorway to that. Seventh ray is ceremonial order and magic and ritual. Count Saint Germain, of course, was the master that did a lot of work with that through the ages. And it's a violet in color. And it was real interesting when we first introduced pyramids to realize that when we introduced these pyramids a long time ago, we used the magic of the pyramid, or the seventh ray of the pyramid, which is the energy that when you put it over grapefruit juice or orange juice, it causes it to go from being bitter to sweet. And changing the enzyme value. Remember, we get back up into the hydrogen atom to talk about changing the enzyme value to make it palatable for the human body without having the human body to use up energy in order to absorb or assimilate it. It was interesting to note that that's the part of the pyramid that was active. And we talked about earlier the entire bulk of humanity going from a caveman consciousness to from a solid liquid into a gas, when we made that little example earlier on before the meditation. Mass consciousness accepted that there was a gas. Mass consciousness finally accepted the fact that the pyramid would cause a change. It wasn't so far out. The Russians, for example, as an army, used to use the pyramids over the razor blades to sharpen them. And in Manchuria in 1973, Russian soldiers wore pyramids on their heads because they mitigated the effect of positive ions on the deserts over there. All these kinds of things are interrelated, and inside the pyramid are all these levels of consciousness. But right now I want you to feel these levels of consciousness. I want you to feel the white light and realize it's the will. I want you to feel the blue energy and realize it's the sun loving coming from the heart. And I want you to feel the thyroid gland and know that that's active intelligence coming from the Holy Ghost. And I want you to feel your stomach area pulsating with yellow energy and realize that that's harmony through conflict, tremendous power of compassion and forgiveness for others, because we've all been in all spaces at one time or another. To feel the integration of the science and knowledge going through the body in the color of orange is the fifth ray. I want you to feel the devotion that you have towards completing this project, completing this tape series, completing your life in a positive way. And I want you to respect the magic of the seventh ray, the violet, the natural order of all things falling together and get in touch with that order, because that order has to do with these seven rays that we're talking about now. And also, I'm sure you've noticed that the music that you're hearing that goes and accompanies each one of these levels, as I go into one level, I go into another level, I'm using the musical notes with the timbers that are required, not just the notes themselves, but I'm putting timber in. And I want you to repeat this exercise, not just do it once and forget about it. I want you to come back to this section of the tape series, maybe once a week or once a day, until it becomes secondary. When you look at somebody going down the street wearing a red dress, you think about, well, that person must have a lot of willpower. Or when you see somebody driving around in a blue car, that person must be a caring person. And start to relate to the colors that you see externally, and start to relate to the sounds that you hear, and start to relate to the attributes of different kinds of foods that correlate to these rays, and start to realize the different shapes that go to these rays, and the gemstones that go to these rays. Like, for example, in the receptor, we use an amethyst for the violet. Start relating to this and feeling it, and you start to get the picture, and then spontaneously things are going to open up in your mind, body, and spirit, and you're going to start to realize this extraterrestrial science, and you're going to go to a much higher, greater inner meaning and understanding of all of it. So now I want you to take a deep breath and then open your eyes up slowly, because you're going to have to readjust to the outside world when you just come from an inner experience. And this inner is a lot closer to perfection than you normally are during the day. So I want you to wake up, open up and stretch, and gradually acclimate yourself back to the physical plane.
This seminar series is continued on the next tape.